All right, let me jump on into the Right Side Way opening monologue with you guys. And I'll remind you all that Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee, Stan McDonald is the sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue. And JP, do me a favor, put his phone number up there on the screen so I can see it where I am and I can call it out here in just a minute. All right, let me just kick off though. So late Monday afternoon, this week, Monday afternoon, the news broke that Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth issued a new directive. You may recall that Hegseth was an infantry officer as recently as 2017. He got out as a major because he was irritated at the level of politicalization that he was experiencing. I mean, Hegseth is, he's a two-time combat zone veteran. He had a tattoo, though, that was deemed scary and extremist. It was just a Jerusalem cross. But hey, in woke world, everything can be scary. But Hegseth, he had actually volunteered to be in support of the Capitol in D.C. when leftists were threatening to riot because Trump's first election. He was denied the opportunity to serve because of his tattoo. Make that make sense. Oh, that's right, you can't. So, Hegseth is actually fairly fresh out of his own time in service, and he's somewhat jaded personally by the fact that he watched political wokeisms invade the province of the supposedly apolitical U.S. military. Well, you can imagine he's got a few notions about how to fix things. And he has immediately set about revising the standards, returning to an era of personal and corporate discipline. He's rooted out DEI and woke policies, generals and admirals that have been asked to retire if they were part of the era of woke and fecklessness that marred the military over the last 4 years. And Monday, this week, he issued a directive that was designed to move some pieces on the chessboard that liberals are not going to like. See, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, he ordered that for the combat arms branches of the military, there will be one single fitness standard for both men and women. And you will meet that standard, or you will not be a frontline warfighter. That's one standard. That's an equal standard, not an equivalent standard. And the liberals don't know what to do with this. You see, the same woke policymakers and pundits who swear that a woman can actually change into a man are now going to try to claim it's unfair for a woman to be required to meet the same standards as a man. You watch. It's coming. They demand equality, but what they really want is not equality. They want equivalency. Now, for those who don't know, the military is divided into various branches within each of the services. In the Army, for instance, you can find combat service support, and combat arms. Everyone can be a warfighter at some point if necessary, but when the time comes. But the combat arms branches are in the Army are the infantry, the armor, artillery, air defense, combat aviation, combat engineers, special forces. Those are the actual combat arms branches. They are designated by virtue of their job description, their MOS, as being frontline warfighters. What most people don't know is that the physical training standards also for men and women have always been different. On the old PT test, as I was growing up in the old Army, on the old PT test, men did more push-ups, but women did more sit-ups. It was a question of anatomy, of bone structure, of muscle base. The maximum score for men might be, and I'm going to throw a number out there, 70 push-ups for your age and 65 sit-ups. But for women of the same age, it might be only 55 push-ups to max and 72 sit-ups. It's just science, really. It's two soldiers. Both have a max score, but they're not equal. They're equivalent. Not anymore. Liberal heads are going to be exploding because Hegseth has now ordered that there will be one single standard for fitness in the combat arms. Men and women, same standards. Equal treatment? Well, then equal standards. Not just equivalent anymore. Now, why is this important? All right, well, listen. Some years ago, about a decade, really, I was at Fort Benning for my battalion commander's course. We met with the commandant of the Ranger Training Brigade while we were there. He told us then, over a decade ago, to expect that women were going to be in the Ranger School very soon. But he swore, with almost a wink and a nod, the standards would not be lowered. Well, it may be controversial to say it, but there's plenty of evidence to the contrary. Liberals desperately wanted to portray that women are equal to men in every respect. They needed to have a Ranger-qualified woman to prove that. And in truth, the women who passed the course, they were indeed studs. They could outpace most men in the world. I get it. They were. But were they equal? Or were they just equivalent? And I'm going to clarify that I don't have a beef with women in the military. I don't. Not at all. They serve with every bit of selflessness and sacrifice and love of country as anybody else. But I also believe that there's a thing called realism. That at times there will be when men and women should be separate and distinct. And truthfully, we all know that much of the forced integration of women into the combat arms roles was politically driven. It was not because it made the good sense or because we did not have the base of a society to work from or draw from for recruiting. No, it was simply politics. Now, before my trolls go summon up some of their keyboard courage to send me some mean tweets, just know that I do get it. In a society like ours, with civilian oversight of the military, there will always be some measure of politics. There will. There'll be politics on spending, on action, on inaction. But where it goes over the line is when national defense is degraded to make a political point, or lives are even lost just to make a political point. Like, for instance, here's another personal experience. In Afghanistan, I was part of a small special operations team. As a part of the special operations community, my team inserted very early. My six-man team was co-located with 12 Special Forces guys, two PSYOPs guys, and one Air Force combat controller. We wore civilian clothes. We drove civilian vehicles. Sometimes we rode horses. We lived among the Afghan people for the better part of a year. We all had beards. You know, we lived in an austere environment where the beard was really more than just a lack of shaving. Having a beard was like identifying with the populace. It was an identity with our allies. It also removed a small amount of stigma when I met with the local warlords and the local leaders and the mullahs and the average folks. And I had a good beard too, man. Full-on coverage from ear to ear. Epic. But we also, though, because of our situation, we lived in very close quarters. It was a group of guys who shared the same outhouse. We only bathed out of a bucket maybe once in a while, and it got a bit ripe around there, let me be honest with you. Well, politicians back home, though, they cared about what they cared about. So when it finally came time for my team to rotate out early, after nearly a year downrange, I was asked to submit my recommendations for the makeup of whatever team would backfill my own. It was an old world environment, right? Despite the Taliban being on the run, women still wore burqas in public. There was still a stigma associated with the West. When I had first arrived, my team was asked to actually stay off the roof of our safe house because we might see women working in their yards on the other side of the walls near our locations. Everywhere we went, we dealt with village elders, government officials, warlords, bandits, all of whom were men, and it was made very clear this was not just the Taliban. It was actually thousands of years of cultural taboos that were not going to unravel overnight. So when I was asked about who should replace my team, I specifically made note to my commander that in my area, they would do well to send an all-male team. And so the powers that be sent out a team that had two females. And it caused problems. It caused lots of problems. Especially when one of the females insulted a village elder because he dared to question her. Look, nothing like sacrificing mission security and effectiveness just to make sure we had diversity in the field, right? Politicians issued a decree, the SecDef caved to it, and a small group of no more than 20 American special ops troops living in austere conditions without support or a flagpole anywhere in sight got orders that were purely political. Now, push that out to the bigger picture. This is what liberals do. They see the military as nothing but a petri dish in which they can grow their liberal experiments. Look, I recognize that not all Democrats feel or act that way, but too often, though, the far left of the political spectrum is able to use the military to assist them in feeling better about their progressive policies by means of experimentation, by means of coverage for their bad mistakes, by means of accomplishing their purely political objectives. And let's be very clear, the military is subject to the directions and sometimes the whims of civilian leaders of our nation. Like I said, I get that. And they should be. But civilian direction is not supposed to degrade readiness. It is not supposed to equate to experimentation. It is not supposed to abuse service members. The military exists for the sole purpose of defending our nation's interests, to win wars, to kill enemies, to do all that is necessary to ensure that the national defense and the nation's interests are preserved and promoted. Politics, mixed with the military, solely for the purpose of political gains, do nothing but degrade who we are as a nation, as a people, and it gets people killed. So it's beyond time for civilian leaders to go back to a position of strength and readiness, not equity and wokeness. Now, women will continue to serve in our military with honor and distinction. I fully appreciate that, and I want it that way. But there needs to be a dose of reality mixed with that service. Because there will be times when the needs of national security will transcend whether or not some politician desperately needs to virtue signal something about gender identity or gender equity or anything else. So going forward, unless some activist judge jumps in again, we're going to have women in the combat arms. They're going to go to Ranger school, and they may serve in frontline deployments, but only if they can meet an equal standard for all. Equal, not equivalent. There's a difference. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.